Yeah, the operator is calling in Eric Iriarte also. But we have Kim, Paulus, Bart, Bernie, Yuki, Patricio, Suzanne, Dottie, Martin, Desiree, Oscar, and Bill.
Okay. Eric Iriarte is in Tokyo at a conference.
Yes, he is, and he asked to be called in his room, but apparently there's a problem connecting to his room, so we'll see.
Okay, he said he's going to try and make it, and he apologises if he doesn't. Okay, well, I think we should make a start, and do we have any apologies other than a possible from Eric?
Yes, we do. It's a bit confusing because I don't know what regards the last call and this call, but should I say the apologies we got all together or just the one that are certain?
I think any that are possible, and I know that Chris Despain.
For both calls, I got Annabeth, Eberhard, Massimiliano, and also again Eberhard. And then Anne-Rachelle for this call.
Okay. And Chris Despain's just posted to the list saying that he's going to try and join us later, hopefully. Okay. Any further apologies? No? Okay. I think notes for the last meeting. I think I just sent out the notes for the wrong last meeting. I think I sent out the January ones, and I think we met on the 4th of February, but there's been ample opportunity for people to comment on lists, so unless there's any objection, I think we should take those notes for the last meeting as approved.
Sorry, Keith, are you actually sure about that? Because I thought I was on the 28th of January call. No, I wasn't. The 28th of January was in fact the last call, wasn't it?
I thought we... Did we meet on the 4th of February? We were due to meet last week on the 11th of February, but we didn't.
No, the next scheduled meeting was the 11th of February, and that got cancelled, and it got moved to today. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. So it was the correct notes.
So the 8th of February was the last one.
Okay. Can I ask just a couple of points then, please? In Section 5, it's bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, bullet 5, there seems to me to be an action point there for Kim Davis, but it's not actually recorded. It says Kim Davis informed the group that he will shortly share another discussion paper with the group. Now, I've not seen that.
No.
I can turn that into an action point.
Yeah, I think to update you on that, Kim has a document that he wants to get to this working group, but it's working through an approvals process with an ICANN and so on. So
that's great.
So he'll have it to us as soon as he physically can, but he's still waiting.
Okay, I'll change it in the notes.
Okay, and then the second question I had was under item 9, there's a reference to the Nairobi workshop. And it's not having been on the call. I think I'd find it helpful to know what you actually mean by that as a concept.
Oh, the workshop as a concept?
What are you actually planning to do in a workshop in Nairobi on delegation and re-delegation?
Well, the discussion that we've had on that topic so far has been around that there are a number of people who want to or have given the an expression of interest in expressing their opinion about actual delegations and re-delegations and so on, And I've had a number of people wanting me to review individual redelegations in particular, which I don't think is appropriate necessarily for this working group, but the idea of running a workshop where anyone who has any issues relating to delegations, redelegations and retirements could have a say, and that the working group members could be present to take on board those comments without sort of being influenced in any individual issue of delegation or redelegation. But if there are some overarching issues that arise from that might impact on our final recommendations to the CCNSO, that could be quite helpful. So it's purely an informational workshop.
Okay.
Bill Samick here. Are there going to be any workshops for the new IDN CCTLD process?
I couldn't answer that. Sorry.
But we aren't doing it.
Nothing to do with us.
CCNSO. No. By we.
Yes, we do. There are two workshops, or say there is one session on Wednesday morning on the IDN CCTLDs, and there is a working group meeting on Thursday.
Okay, on the redelegation and delegation workshop, I would be very cautious about doing something like that. In fact, personally, I would object to it. There's a lot of issues involved. I know IANA keeps all of its information confidential for that very reason. People make charges and countercharges, and what we would be doing is providing a bully pulpit for anyone who happens to be there who wants to say and you know, make claims and charges, an opportunity to do that and get it into the public record, and those kinds of things never disappear from the Internet once they appear there. So I, in fact, would object to this workshop.
Okay.
I somehow thought it had to do with the new delegation process, which was why Kim was interested in getting the procedures posted so people would have a basis on which to start preparing their applications.
Yeah, no, that's beyond the remit of this working group, but more a process for the IDN PDP.
But it is, the delegation process is going to, that we are exploring and that will either be determined to be sufficient, adequate, or need some modification, is a process that the IDN CCTLDs will need to be following. So that's how I made that mistake.
Sure, yeah, but I think our work is more a long term, and at this stage I think the issues for the IDN delegations are just for the fast track people, and it may be that for the non-fast track IDN applications that our work may have some influence in due course, but not at this stage.
Okay.
Excellent. Okay. Most important that we firstly note that there are some changes to times in Nairobi, and I'll post these to the list immediately after this meeting. But the workshop is now scheduled for 1400 hours to 1530, and the working group meeting for the Sunday is from 1630 hours till 1800 hours. And the reason for that change has been because of security in Nairobi and their desire to close the venue at 1800 hours every day. So we've lost a little bit of time for the workshop session, and it starts a little bit earlier, but I'll get that confirmed to the list very shortly.
A new member?
Apologies, it's Suzanne. I didn't hit star 6 quickly enough. I shall do so now.
So Suzanne's in the office today.
And the boss is angry.
Okay, so I think in terms of other work, just to review where we're at, we had, prior to the last meeting, circulated a number of documents, had some further input on those documents, which were really seeking to compare the policy statements and guidelines between RFC 1591, ICP1 and the GAP principles. And I think subsequent to that last meeting, Bill's done a fantastic job of actually comparing the policy to the process as outlined in the IANA document circulated by Kim, and has pointed out a number of issues that appear to be inconsistent in terms of the comparison of policies and guidelines with actual processes. So firstly, a big thanks to Bill for his work looking back and finding the links and pertinent points on these issues are very helpful, and I think provides us with a framework to now do further work in terms of identifying the gaps and reporting back to the CCNSO. But I'd like to open this topic up for general debate.
Well, no, there's no debate, then I guess we should just move on, huh?
Well done.
Was there any particular part of the debate you want to look at, Keith?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Is there any particular kind of you're looking for?
Sorry, I'm only getting about half of every word.
Yeah, you're breaking up, Kim.
Oh, really? I'll try again. Is there any particular kind of debate you're looking to have?
No, just interested in people's comments, whether we're sort of heading in the right direction, whether or where we might go from here, you know, whether there's anything wrong with the documentation at this stage, just a general discussion.
Well, I will say from my perspective, I think been had on the line and offline, so to speak.
Sorry, Kim, I'm only getting every second word if I'm lucky.
Pulling back and see if the connection improves.
Okay. There does seem to be a reasonable amount of background noise on the call, so can people who are not talking please press mute or star 6? Okay, Bill, do you have any comments regarding what you've posted and the ensuing debate?
Well, I guess the motivation for the comments, basically, the concern I have is that, and I think I've made that clear, and I think Kim understands it, and, you know, we both have some appreciation for the other point of view on this. The concern I have is that the current policy is defined in this draft document and in some of the touch points in the more recent redelegation evaluations that are posted on the ICOM website, is that there's been a change, or there's been some change or move from previous interpretations of how to implement RFC 1591 and what its requirements are in delegations and redelegations over the past, since 1999, when ICON started this process with the .pn redelegation. I think that was in 99. And some of the language that is now included in this document and in the more recent redelegation reports is language that extends beyond the interpretation of RFC 1591 that's been held in the past when actual managers have been selected or when redelegations have happened. And so I've made comments on that in my annotation to the existing procedures. And I know it's a conundrum, because what Kim and the staff there are trying to do is post in a public document what the current procedures are. And what I'm concerned about is that, well, current procedures have been different in many years. And this is one particular group of current procedures which basically extends beyond what previous current procedures were. And I'd hate to be in a situation where, for example, my own delegation is in conflict with many parts of this list of procedures. My accountability framework agreement with ICON conflicts with the requirements in this list of current procedures, and yet ICON and I, my company, have this agreement. So I'm concerned about the conflicted nature of putting something like this up as current process when, you know, it doesn't properly reflect the totality of delegation and redelegation history and current situation.
Hmm.
So I'm basically just restating, I think, what I've said in the document itself, and why I posted the information about the RFCs and the IANA function contracts and so on. Because when you look at this kind of material, you try to find a common thread, and I've been trying to, in this markup, been trying to recreate that common thread so that the wide range of processes, procedures, and the wide range of existing structures for managing top-level domains is properly reflected in the language, so that the many, many domains that currently exist that do not actually meet these new current procedures are somehow provided for in the language that gets posted.
Yeah. So yeah, it's sort of there's two parts to that too, I think, Bill. One is that the changes in terminology by themselves have allowed some policy creep, as well as some general policy change. Also, is that, you know, in terms of changing the name to sponsoring organisation and so on, it allows a bit more wiggle room in terms of interpretation of what that might mean compared to a delegation holder or CCTLD manager or whatever previous terminology was used.
And I hope Kim is back on and has got a good
question. Yeah, I just heard someone come back in. Could they identify themselves? No. Kim, are you on the call?
Hi, Kate. I am Eric. I just arrived.
Oh, Eric, welcome.
Yes.
Okay. Hopefully we'll have Kim back on the call in a minute. Okay. I guess the question then is, where do we go from here? I mean, what we have is a series of pointers to gaps between policies and guidelines and procedures, which I think is not an extant list, but merely the ones that Bill and one or two others have picked up on. And I guess the other issue that we've been debating on the list too is whether or what is the policy, and there seems to be some slightly developing consensus around the idea that 1591 is in fact the policy for delegations and redelegations, with some exceptions to that, and some comments on earlier RFCs which tended not to necessarily deal directly with delegations and redelegations, but more exhibiting or explaining the sorts of behaviours expected from people who are managing entries in the DNS. But I'd welcome any discussion on those points too.
Can you hear me?
Tim.
Sure.
Hi. So I was on the call before, but I don't know what's happening with the muting situation. Hopefully I'm much clearer now.
Very much clearer, thank you, Tim.
So I might have missed a bit of the discussion, but I heard much of what Bill just said. I'm trying to think of how to succinctly put my comments on that, but I think, generally speaking, I don't believe there's been much significant change, or perhaps any real significant change, between the language of RSC 1591 and current practice, with the exception of the increased role of governments that I think the INF staff first articulated in around 1997, and obviously, you know, the GAC principles highlight that in particular, that governments assert a much stronger role in how their local fish utilities operated than they did in the mid-80s when, you know, fish utilities were first handed out. But I think, you know, I'm happy to discuss point by point and have a, you know, a discussion about certain aspects of it, but I think generally the difference in language more reflects more confidence in the procedure, in a sense that RSC 1591 was very vague, and with a lot more implementation experience over, you know, the past couple of decades, we can be a bit more specific about how those various criteria have been implemented. Now, you know, there's obviously two sides to the coin, and then one person's more specific interpretation can be considered another person's, you've changed the rules on me. I fully accept that certain people's interpretations are very different because RSC 1591 was so vague that I think one impression of what is adherence to that might differ from another person's impression of what is adherence to that. I can only speak more or less definitively from my time on this side of the trenches implementing IANA, and I don't think, you know, in our time, in my time at IANA since 2005, we haven't changed the way we've done it at all except to formalise the process more. But the evaluative criteria hasn't changed at all, to my knowledge, certainly not consciously. But, you know, we've turned it more from a process that wasn't well documented into a heavily checklisted process where, you know, we're fairly careful about if we've missed something, go back and ask, that kind of thing. So hopefully that you can sense the spirit in which this documentation is being written. And, you know, coming back to the fundamental point I wanted to make is I don't believe in any substantial way, apart from what I mentioned, the actual principles have changed since 1591.
Okay. Yeah, but there's a reasonable assertion that the interpretation in that finding out of those policies might have adjusted the policy slightly nonetheless. And I guess that's the ultimate issue for this working group, is to table what are the perceived differences and then refer those back to the CCNSO to see whether RFC 1591 is an adequate document or not, and whether it should be the binding policy document for future delegations and re-delegations.
It's Bill Semek here. I might add to that that one thing we might consider also is seeing if we can develop an opinion as to whether the current interpretation of implementation of RFC 1591 is consistent with what this working group determines it should be.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think our job is to highlight the gaps, and the CCNSO then decides whether those gaps are significant enough to warrant going into some form of desired change, whether that's through a PDP or a rewriting of RFC 1591 or whatever the case may be.
Or, as I might propose, has often been said, when people want to change laws that aren't working, maybe it'll work better if they're more consistently and appropriately enforced. And I think it's conceivable that RFC 1591 is a good basis around which to continue to manage policy if it's consistently enforced and implemented, and that includes what I thought was the beauty of the language originally, the ability for it to for the umbrella to cover many different structures and arrangements, because not every territory, country, or region is the same. Not every country, territory, or region even has a law or an incorporation capability or electricity.
Or people in some.
Yeah, exactly. So some of the language in the newer interpretation, which says it has to be there have to be a level of skills in the country and operated under local law with administration based in the country, some of that language isn't appropriate for some regions and territories. And even now. And we don't know what new codes are going to be created in the future or why or how. And the beauty of, from my perspective, RFC 1591 is that it permitted those different kinds of arrangements so that there could be active domain names and even Internet services in areas that might not otherwise happen.
Well, yeah, I guess to pose the question to Kim, if something like Antarctic were to apply today for a delegation, imagining that it hadn't been previously delegated, because it doesn't have permanent residence or a government or laws, would IANA automatically exclude it as an application, even though it's on the 3166 delegated list?
What was the example you gave, sorry?
Antarctica.
It's hard to say. Firstly, the caveat is that as staff, we don't make the decision. We just present the facts to the board, and ultimately, the ICANN board decides. But I can point to the situation of Western Sahara, where I think it'd be fair to say that because there is no clear government there, and there's in fact multiple parties claiming to be the government there, and even the United Nations has not been in a position thus far to decide who is the ultimate administrator of that territory. We've received many conflicting delegation requests for .eh and have not been able to successfully delegate it on that basis, so there's so much conflict there that it cannot be resolved, particularly from a governance point of view. Historically, some country codes have been delegated, outside of the country, and I think, even in the recent guidelines draft that I post, we still refer to the concept of a caretaker, where if there's no practical way of operating a country code in the country, then it could be considered that it'd be operated outside the country. And, in my time, I think just last year, in fact, we delegated .so Somalia, where it is delegated to the transitional government. The transitional government is not really based in the country. They're based administratively out of Kenya, I believe, and technical operations and administrative operations, I think, as I recall, were to be based out of Dubai or something like to that effect. So on a case-by-case basis, if there's the capacity in the country, then, again, these rules are not hard and fast rules that you have to absolutely meet every single criteria. It's a set of principles and a guide to what we look for and the aspects that as staff we compile information on. And we present, the full picture or as full a picture as we can to the board. And ultimately, it's for the board to decide. And, I think I said in an email recently is that one of the challenges, I suspect, is without a formal PDP ratified policy, the board in some respects is left to interpret between what they think is right too. And, in my time you've seen different board members come and go, and each board member has their own position on what they think RFC 1591 means, what they think the policy means. And with this fake excuse me, with this vagueness, you know, the interpretation has varied over time. And reiterating something I probably said on the first call, I think clarifying a lot of this would be beneficial in the long run because it leaves less ambiguity.
Okay, thanks.
It's Martin Boyle here. Can I just chip in?
Sure.
I think one of the issues I'm actually struggling with is that we've got a document that hasn't any more status than just being a draft, as being an attempt to indicate what is currently being done. We got particularly then confused because we then got a certain amount of effort on editing that document to try and bring it in line with what people identify as being existing documents around the place. And yet that, I don't think, was our mandate. And I actually just sort of wonder whether what we really need to be doing with Kim's document, because that is just a draft, it's not gone through any acceptance procedure, and the other documents, is to include it in the side-by-side comparison. And really, I guess, picking up on Bill's point, trying to identify where it is that the process is drawing its authority. So in other words, its traceability back to, in Bill's terms, RFC 1591, but then other documents also on the face of things. Second point I'd like to make is I think we are at a certain risk of focusing on legacy situations and not recognising that the documents that we're trying to put in, the policy that we're trying to identify, you know, is there a policy there, should be forward-looking and saying, well, actually, you know, if you now get a new atoll coming up in the South Pacific that is deemed to be a country, that is allocated a country code, how do you decide which of the conflicting parties calling for that code should have the responsibility and right to do it? And getting bogged down on the legacy about which you can do nothing seems to me perhaps to unnecessarily confuse the discussion. And the third point, final point I want to make is the reference that suggests that only 1591 is policy. And I would actually flag that we have GAC principles originally from 2000 and updated in 2005, if I remember correctly, after quite wide consultation within ICANN. Having been put on the table, according to the ICANN bylaws, if they are not accepted, they have to be explained why they're not accepted. This has never been done, and therefore my assumption is that the GAC principles actually count as being standard and current ICANN policy, and would have to remain so until somebody actually turns out that no, they're not, for the following reasons.
I think there's an invitation to dispute. Although I'd have to say, Martin, on that final point, that the GAC principles, in terms of the comparison document that Bernie's put together for us between RFC 1591, ICP1 and the GAP principles. There's no yawning gaps between those three sets of documents, and perhaps the only gaps are slightly differing interpretations and the GAC asserting a stronger position for governments in the process of a delegation or redelegation, which is potentially understandable. But I think if the GAC wished to assert its principles as ICANN principles, then it would need to elevate that document from outside of the GAC to the ICANN board as a recommended policy document, wouldn't they?
I think that the GAC actually believes that it has done that.
Yes.
In that it's made direct reference to it in its communique, which is its straightforward communication from the GAC to the board. And that was done at the, was it the Marvel Plata meeting?
Yes.
Suzanne, can you remember?
Yes, it was.
And here we are very nearly 5 years later, and the board has never turned around and said, no, this is not. I think you're right, Keith. It doesn't actually differ very much from anything else that has been said. And very largely because when the GAC worked on that document, it worked on it in full knowledge of RFC 1591 and of existing practice. But you know, as I say, it sits there, and since RFC 1591, you've had the world's, or you've had the US government's four principles in July that year. You've had the World Summit also at the end of that year. And that's part of my point, that the world is moving on, and people's understanding of the way that you might get accountability and understanding of the responsibility to the country that is identified in the code. In RFC 1591, that you know, this actually formed part of that pattern and that identification.
Okay. Martin, would you be willing to sort of document your assertions regarding the GAC principles and send it to the list?
Well, certainly I can. I think perhaps it is something that, not being a member of the GAC, that perhaps I ought to do in conjunction with Suzanne, if Suzanne is willing to or feels that she's able to speak on behalf of the GAC in that way. The alternative is, I guess, to turn to the chair of the GAC and ask them to explain what I think is yet again that when the GAC tables in its communique, that constitutes advice to the board, and that the board, if it is minded that it cannot accept the advice of the GAC, that it is duty bound not just to ignore it, but to actually explain why.
Can I add an extra perspective to this?
What? Can I get in the queue, please? This is Suzanne.
Sure, Suzanne. And who was there?
That was Kim.
Oh, Kim. Yep, sure.
Yeah. So I actually met with Yanis as chair of the GAC and some other senior management of ICANN. Maybe I'm going to say 3 years ago, more or less, about the status of the GAC principles and how that should impact IANA staff's role in terms of performing delegations. And I think, hopefully I'm not misrepresenting or misrecollecting, but the consensus seemed to be that it wasn't important to satisfy whether the GAC principles as a whole were accepted or not by the board. And it's fully consistent that should the board make a decision on a case-by-case basis on an individual redelegation that is not consistent with the GAC principles, it would explain why it made that decision. So, for example, if in a specific case the board didn't decide in favour of the government for compelling public interest reasons that did not follow the guidance of the government, that it made open and plain its decision about why it did that. And that would be within the spirit of GAC advice, if it's not followed, that the board has to explain itself. So it was more a sense that if the GAC principles were considered applicable in a case, but for some reason the board didn't follow it, then in its decision making it would explain why it was inconsistent with the principles. I don't know if that helps illuminate things a little.
Thanks, Kim.
Can I actually ask a question about that? In your knowledge, Kim, bearing in mind that you've been Mr. IANA for that period, to your knowledge, do you think that you have ever gone against the GAC principles?
Interesting question. I would say that there have been requests that have not been successful that have full government support. However, they've been deficient for other reasons. So it hasn't solely been going against the government just for the sake that it's not. We disagree with the government's assertion about who should run it, but rather that there's been numerous other deficiencies in the specific application. So it wasn't directly related to the outcome, and if the government hadn't have expressed its opinion, it likely would have very much gone the same way regardless.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Kim. Suzanne, you were holding your hand up.
Thank you, Keith. And thank you, Martin. I will be more than happy to work with you too, as the GAC observer, one of two, to help sort of document this as Keith has suggested. And Kim, I appreciate your overview as well, because to my knowledge, the GAC has never received any such communication from the board that there was a decision that might have been inconsistent. I will say, however, and I'm speaking just anecdotally here, as a GAC member, I know that in various discussions around the GAC table, some people do recall that actually the board has never acknowledged receipt of those particular GAC principles. Mind you, they have not acknowledged receipt of several others. But that is an outstanding question that is, in fact, probably going to be looked at in the context of the joint GAC board working group on the role of the GAC, because the focus there is, you know, how does the relationship work? How is it structured? Is it working effectively? Are there improvements that could be made? And I know people are mindful of the fact that, in view of the fact that the GAC is an advisory body, which the majority of GAC members, if not all, are perfectly content to retain, if I may say. Again, this is just anecdotal. I'm trying to share some insights. But it would be helpful to see that there is actual evidence that the board does act from time to time on the advice provided by the GAC. And Martin is certainly aware, and as I think he is related as a former GAC member, the GAC believes its communiques constitute advice and certainly believe that its principles constitute advice. But we don't have a lot of documentation as to which parts of any of those communications, which we consider advice, if you will, under our capacity as an advisory body, have or have not been actually acted upon.
Okay.
So I would throw that out if people find that helpful. I do know, and I appreciate Martin reminding people that, yes, from the GAC's mind, I do think that things have progressed since RFC 1591. However, the GAC does respect RFC 1591 and refers to it repeatedly.
Quite clearly so, yes.
Yeah, but that we did have our principles in 2005, and many, many GAC members, just for you all to know, in case you don't ever read the transcripts or are not able to sit in our meetings, do refer to the WISIS principles.
Okay. Yes?
Paulus here.
Yes, Paulus.
I just wanted to maybe compare the two issues that on the principles and the policy, and I remember that in our discussions, things that come from the GAC are always treated as advice rather than policy. And I thought that probably that's what's been reflected in most of the transactions between the GAC and the board so far. So the principles may always be taken as advice.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I think...
It's Martin here. Can I actually intervene on that? Because, yes, the GAC, I think you're entirely right, is an advisory committee. But I think when it states that these are principles, these are things that... the GAC, when it worked out, and you remember the GAC principles on CCTLDs, is a slightly odd mixture of things that are identified as principles and things that are identified as guidelines. So let's just focus on the principles. They're actually saying that these are important enough that we believe that they should be policy. That's how I would read what they were saying. And that that is then, and just picking up there from what Kim said earlier, that policy is being used to try and assess on individual cases. And it's when you then get the conflict on that policy that you go back to the GAC and explain why it is that in this particular case the principles weren't applicable. It's this dividing line between principles and policy, and in fact in this particular case I must admit, so where I'm sitting now, I would be inclined to see the GAC principles very firmly as being a policy document and not just an advice that you can ignore if you so wish.
Okay. Suzanne, were you wanting to make a point?
Well, I think just to add on to Martin's point, which is a very good one, that the GAC is very mindful, Paulos, of its advisory role, but the goal is to provide that advice in the context of policy. So it is intended to help inform policy, if you will.
Yeah.
And I hope I haven't confused things, Paulos, but you know, we're very mindful of our status. On the other hand, when we do develop principles, that is meant to sort of signify this is above and beyond a communique from a meeting. We have taken this issue seriously enough to develop principles that we are entrusting you to equally take seriously.
Okay, look, I wonder, Suzanne and Martin, thanks both for your offer. Could we take you up on your offer to just provide a note, if you can, after talking to the GAC, about... the subject of your belief of the GAC principles forming a substantial policy advisement to the ICANN board, or I guess a reflection on your belief of the status of the GAC principles. It just might be quite handy, because I know there is some opposition, probably more from people who are not on this call than on this call, who say the GAC principles to them as a CCTLD manager are relatively meaningless because it's not an ICANN policy. And I suppose, interestingly, the ICANN board could have picked up the GAC principles and made them the ICANN principles of delegation and redelegation. And every now and again I hear them referred to as that, but their status is somewhere in between, I guess, and it would be probably quite useful for this working group to just have a bit of clarity about what the GAC believes the status of the GAC principles are.
Okay.
So,
Keith, it's Bill.
Yeah, Bill.
I did want to point out that the preamble to the principles 2005 specifically, at least to me, appears to say that this is, in fact, not a policy document, but merely a guidebook. And it says the principles are intended as a guide to the relationships between government, CCTLD, and ICANN.
Yeah.
Not intended to be binding. If either the government or registry decide not to adopt the principles, this cannot be held against the registry, and the registry still has a valid existence.
Yeah.
So given that and I wasn't at the meeting, obviously, so I'm just sort of extrapolating, that a group of government representatives at GAC that drafted this and then approved it put this sort of limiting language in it, it would seem to me that using it as a guide is appropriate, and I believe that's what the IANA staff have been doing.
Certainly from what Kim's been indicating, that is the case. And I think, you know, we're talking about something that may not have huge significance to our work overall, given that there's nobody reporting significant gaps between the GAC principles and RFC 1591. And as Martin has said, you know, the principles are largely based on 1591 in any case. So, but I'd appreciate for our records, if we can, just to have that bit greater clarity over the GAC's belief in the status of the document. That would be quite convenient, I think. And going back now to Martin's first point in that discussion, I think he was making the suggestion that a useful next step, rather than the approach exhibited by Bill, which was to critique the IANA processes document and perhaps seek Kim's modification of that document, was instead to try aligning the IANA processes next to the comparison document that we have for RFC 1591, ICP1 and GAC principles, and play spot the gaps with that new document. Is that a correct summation of what you are asserting, Martin?
Yes, very much so. I actually use the term of identifying where the process gets its authority from, because that seems to me to be very firmly what Bill's critique tended to focus on anyway.
Yeah. Well, Bernie, would that be an onerous task for you and Bart to perhaps pick up and try and do some work on?
I guess that request was already made at the previous meeting. We've just gotten busy. I've actually gotten partway through that and should have that completed by the end of next week and out to the working group.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Thank you, Bernie. And thank you, Martin and Bill, and Suzanne, for your input there.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Could I ask a question? I didn't know Bernie was on the phone, and I'm glad that he is, so that I can put it out. not only to the drafter, but to all of you. I haven't been sure how to respond or whether any action is needed on my part as a GAC observer to the questions that were attached to the comparison document, or is this just premature?
Probably premature. I think that.
Hi, it's Becky. I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, hi, Becky. Welcome.
I told all of you that, I told some people that I was being buzzed, but that's like seriously true.
Okay. Sorry. Going back, Suzanne, your question was whether you wanted the GAC to respond to the questions in the comparison document. I think the answer at this stage is no. That's probably a set of questions that the CCNSO will want to wrestle with initially to see which questions are more pertinent or more distasteful, I guess.
Keith?
Yeah, sure.
This is Bernie. When Bart and I worked on this, Becky as my co-drafter, what we were trying to do after doing the comparison was just to lay down a few questions as an encouragement for people to generate their own. That's the first point. So we don't believe these are absolute and final. We were just trying to, if you will, prime the pump so people would ask more questions along the veins of these. The second one is those questions in that comparison document, in our mind, submitted to the working group, and pretty much as Keith has said, this is potentially something that will go back to the CCNSO, and the whole group's going to have to wrestle with this and decide what they like in this or not.
Yep, and it's not the definitive, exhaustive list of questions, but more issues to start the debate rolling. Did someone just join the call, or is that someone falling off?
No, it's Paulos. I got dropped out and just rejoined.
Oh, thanks, Paulos. Okay, so we've got a document in the making. So is everyone reasonably relaxed with that approach?
It's Bill again. Kim, I know this is actually a working document for you, not just something for us to put on our matrix and mull over. Do you have a timetable in during which you need to or are required to post it? Is there any further input you might like from the members of the group individually, or can you just give us a little feedback on that? I know we sort of grabbed your document and turned it into part of our workspace.
Well, so there's no specific timeline where it must be published, although the initial thinking when I first drafted, I think some 6 months ago, was that it would be published prior to the launching IDM6LD, so that all these new influx of applicants they're receiving would have better guidance at the process than what they have now, which is more or less interpreting what they think RSV-1591 means. So obviously we haven't hit that mark. Our desire is still to publish it, and we believe it's important that we be transparent about how we implement our processes. And to be honest, at this moment, with Nairobi approaching, it's kind of on the back burner, at least the last Nairobi. It's certainly our goal is make that public, and I know I've had a little debate with you about the appropriateness of doing that. I think it's fair to say our view is that it's more important that we be transparent and we get criticized for doing it wrong and we don't know how we do it. So coming back to the discussion about whether we should publish this or not, I think Unless there's a strong feeling by the community that this is not appropriate for us to share, we would like to share it, even if it's just on the basis that, as a community, you can pick it apart and say you're doing it wrong. And that would be useful feedback to us to to inform the policy process within ICANN to develop better process policy, or to inform ICANN that it should be implementing things differently, and we can get authorization from NCIA and so forth to change our processes. But that's kind of the thinking that's going into it right now.
So you're saying at some point there's an intention to publish if the community doesn't have any objection, but there may be modifications to the documents in any case. But I guess we need to work on the basis of what we have in front of us at the moment.
Right. I mean, I don't think there's going to be any substantial change because, you know, as I said, when I first shared it with the working group, I believe it's an accurate description of how we do things. And the aim of editing it was more to improve clarity. If anything was not made in a clear way, we could express in a way that's better understood, whether it's using terminology or so forth, but not that principle anything was open to debate, so it's going to change. The intention was merely to stop the current practice. It wasn't to say, is this best practice? I mean, should we be changing some of it? Because, you know, to be honest, as speaking personally, I think, you know, there is room for improvement, but that hasn't been our intention to change the process rather than stop the and that can be a basis for any number of things moving forward. And I would hope one of the outcomes of this, and this is part of a number of other documents we're working on, is that we'll get to a point where ICANN has an up-to-date set of comprehensive documentation on its website about how it does all of its functions. And we won't have a situation where we're interpreting a document written 10, 20 years ago as being accurate today. And, you know, if you look at, ignoring the principles for a moment and just look at the practices, if you look at RFC 1591, it says, you know, you have to submit root zone changes to such and such an email address. That email address doesn't work. It has, you know, the name of the Whois server. That Whois server doesn't exist. You know, there's a lot of practical implementation issues that are just incorrect. And we would like to have up-to-date, accurate documentation and have that be a living document so that if, you know, email address change next month, we would update the document to have the new email address and so forth. So any new methods of working, you know, if we provide a web interface, new changes, which we fully intend to over the coming year, that once that's deployed, we'll put the URL on that document as well, and so on and so on. So the idea is that would be kept up to date on an ongoing basis with how we're performing the function.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Kim. I think we have a pathway forward there with Bernie working on the further comparison. I think, Bernie, are there any other documents that are still requiring review or sign-off by this working group?
I'm not sure if we have sign-off requirements. I believe I sent around the document which looked at the old RFCs below 1,000.
Oh, yes. And there was, I don't think there's been any real comment on the list on those.
I think in the last day there was a lot of talk about 920, but... as I said, I looked at it from a rather narrow perspective of country codes and policies and not general principles of how TLD managers should behave. So, and I think I've made that clear in the header of the document. So that's out there, and you know, people can comment on it if they want to.
When did you send that out?
I'll tell you what. I'll send it out after this meeting in a little summary. And the document's name was ICANN-CCNSO-DRDWG-relevance-old-RFCs.
Okay.
But I'll post it to the list after this call and invite comments. Yes, I think Yeah, that's right. In Bernie's and my discussion on this topic, I think we agreed that, you know, there are some references in the early RFCs that are suggesting behaviours that should be exhibited by people with entries in the DNS, but they're not necessarily policy statements or related specifically to the operation of a CCTLD. So if people want to think about Bernie's document with that in mind, and if there are behaviours that are relevant today, perhaps we should isolate those and have them as something that we could comment on them, you know, further down the track. Okay, and all other documents, we've had a sufficient debate on the list. Bernie?
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Can you guys hear me? It's Becky, I'm sorry.
Becky, yeah.
Hi. I just wanted to go back to one question just to sort of talk with Kim about the – I sort of understand all of the issues about wanting to get this out in the public and have discussion on it, but I guess the question I have is whether, given the work of this group, there is a need to sort of push ahead quickly on the publication of those documents.
Is it your suggestion that we should be, either should be pushing to publish those documents sooner rather than later?
No, I think my suggestion is, I mean, I completely understand your desire to have a document out there that is a document that sort of discusses where you are and where IANA is and what IANA is doing, but under the circumstances, given the fact that we are, you know, sort of in the midst of this discussion among the working group, is holding off for a couple of weeks while we sort of wrestle through this stuff a problem that creates, you know, significant issues for you in a practical sense?
Hard to give a definitive answer. The major risk, even risk is the wrong word. The major problem right now is that what's in that document is more or less what we're telling individually every IDN security applicant that's knocking on that door. And as I'm sure almost everyone on the call is familiar, we had 4 IDN CCTLDs approved, the strings approved last month. In turn, we had 4 CCTLD delegation applications received shortly thereafter. My understanding is more will be approved this month, and there's going to be more and more people coming, and there's a huge amount of staff work going into explaining the process in detail on a one-on-one basis with these applicants, and it would be a great relief to us to have better documentation published so we can point them to it. And this is the documents that have been shared with the working group as part of that. There's also some other documents that have been shared, but it's all part of a big collection of documentation that we would like to make public. So,
Are you getting applications from people who are not already operating CCIDNs or CCTLDs?
To be honest, I'm not really in a position to say that the identities of the applicants are held in confidence. But for those that, there are applicants that do operate CCTLDs, but to be honest, they were assigned in the mid-80s, and the criteria were applied relatively differently. So it's completely understandable that they're not familiar with the process either.
I'm not trying to make your life miserable. I just sort of was under the impression that we had tried to simplify the CCIDN fast track to the point where we were talking about existing delegations with the support of relevant governments. And so to the extent that you are And I completely understand that there's a lot going on and you're dealing with a lot of other things. I want to make sure that we are not pressed into resolving issues prematurely when the fast track was intended to be a relatively non-controversial proceeding.
There's no suggestion that we're holding up any requests on the basis that this working group is going to produce something. Quite the contrary. We will continue processing re-delegation requests and delegation requests as we have been in the absence of more specific guidance, on a day-to-day basis. So, our desire to publish our documents is to lessen our amount of repeating re-explaining the process to potential applicants and actual applicants.
Okay, I'm going to ask the question again because I understand you're not holding things up, but redelegation issues are not an issue in the CC, in the IDN context, right?
Right, yeah. So,
okay, the question is only, you're getting applications from what I assume under the rules should be existing CC operators with the approval and agreement of their government to operate IDNs that correspond to the existing CCs.
Well, the distinction, as I understand it, so it doesn't have to be the current CC utility operator. It's completely okay for a new operator to apply for a CC utility IDN. But the point is it needs to be non-contentious. So it's almost an immediate exclusion if multiple parties are fighting over what the should be or how it should run. But otherwise, it's the exact same process for the delegation. Obviously, there's this new process, the string selection process, where governments have to nominate the string. They say, got XY is an appropriate representation of the country. That goes through an evaluation panel. Ultimately, that gets approved or rejected. And then ICANN publishes the fact that .XY is submitted as a representation of that country. And then once that's received, it's the exact same process as if you wanted to delegate a new CCTLD today, whether it's ASCII or whether it's IDN.
Okay, so what am I missing in terms of the notion that the fast track was intended a sort of non-controversial rollout involving existing CC operators with the agreement of their government to operate an IDN, not necessarily equivalent, but a corresponding IDN?
Becky,
mm-hmm.
Maybe I can help because I worked on that a bit. I don't think there was, as Kim has pointed out, there was no requirement that it be this existing CCTLD operator.
Right, but it had to be with the agreement of the government.
You need the absolute approval of the government. Let me rephrase that. As a minimum, you need a formal statement of non-objection from the government.
Okay.
As Kim has quite clearly pointed out, there cannot be, there could be a situation where there are competing parties for the same name for the same country, but that would create a very difficult situation, and it would probably mean that the application would get delayed a very, very long time. Am I essentially correct, Kim? I'm trying to remember these pieces.
Yeah, from my perspective, we treat it exactly the same as an ASCII CLD when it comes to us, which is if there was a dispute over .us, that would probably be a long drawn-out process too. So it's no different for the IDN CCCLD.
The conflict...
Wait. There is an affirmative non-objection from the government?
That is required, yes. Well, let's not forget here, we're clumping everything together. There are two very distinct, separate parts for a fast-track IDN CCTLD. The first part, which technically is completely separate from IANA, is
a government coming in, a government-backed or non-objected application coming in for a name, and that name being approved as being a valid representation for the country in a language of the country. Once that gets done, if you get past that step, and that's what Kim was talking about earlier, there are four that have been done this far, Kim?
That's right.
So four have passed that first step. Once you pass that first step, which is a very different process than anything else we've had in the CC world, because there's no reference book as to what's acceptable or not. So you've had to define, if you will, a policy-based approach to concepts that will make it okay. Once you're past that step, then it gets the applicants have to make a formal application to IANA for delegation, and then it goes into the absolute standard IANA process.
Right, but except that the absolute standard IANA process at that point, I mean, how, as a realistic matter, to what extent are you getting applications that are different from the existing CCs and all of that? I mean, my understanding was, and I'm being overly simplistic here, but that, you know, the bottom line is that this process, the fast track, should not determine or drive the application, the sort of development of policy with respect to the process generally, and that we should be dealing with easy cases here. And if we're not, that concerns me. I mean, I understand that nothing is easy about the IDN world, but I really, it makes me very, very nervous to get put into a corner where we're developing, you know, policy for CC delegations and redelegations on the basis of the fast track, because the notion was that these were not going to be the controversial or difficult issues.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that any policy has changed with them. I'm not saying that we're asking the working group to investigate the that basis. I'm saying that frankly, we got maybe one delegation every 2 or 3 months, one delegation every delegation. And that was fully within our capabilities as staff to explain the process one-on-one, in-depth, go through it and document it, you know, in an absence of us having, you know, a lot of documentation on our website. However, when we have simultaneously receiving half a dozen requests within 1 week, the desire for us to document that on our website is greater because, you know, we're spending a lot of staff resources. You know, we have the staff resources, but it seems like an awful waste of time going through writing emails in detail for a large number of requesters when, you know, it would seem a lot more logical just to publish that as items on our website.
Totally fair, completely fair. But what is the relationship between that and the IDN Fast Track?
Well, the IDN Fast Track is what's driving this huge uptick in requests that IANA is receiving. Because we've gone from a model where we have maybe 6 requests a year to having more requests within a week and more coming this month and undoubtedly over the next few months more and more. You know, I think there's like 19 pending in that string review process, so, you know, essentially 19 requests in the span of a couple of months, whereas normally we deal with 6 in a year.
Because, and are these situations where you have, you know, statements of non-objection from the government?
Well, you know, as the delegation process requires that the government have had an opportunity to comment. It's not a requirement that the government necessarily support the request, but if they basically do not support the request, that's highly problematic. But in terms of the existing delegation criteria, which we apply to IDN CC utilities as well, you know, that's the criteria. Although, that being said, I think the government's are highly supportive of the applications we've received so far.
Becky, just to take this out of IANA, to get in the gate, just to have your string evaluated, you need that non-objection letter.
Okay, and so...
So the process can't even start at looking at the string. So if one of those actually gets to IANA, that non-objection letter has been written at some point before.
Okay, and so I'm sorry to be really stupid about this, but I am concerned about letting the fast-track process, which really was intended, at least as I understood it, to not force policy or be controversial at a certain level, to drive the creation or establishment or announcement or pronouncement of policy. So I just want to understand what the difficulty, what the hard choices that IANA is sort of facing here, and how we can help IANA in that process with respect to the publication of this document, because it's not clear to me that what problem we're solving. And Kim, I really am not trying to be aggressive or confrontational or anything like that. I mean, I'm just trying to understand exactly what's going on here.
Well, I don't know how to directly answer your question other than what I've said, but I will say that, you know, in my time at IANA, I think it's been a real shame that we haven't had this completely transparent set of procedures published on our website, and I think that's been an ongoing problem, and that's regardless of the IDMC's process. And
I think everybody agrees with you on that. I mean,
right.
at least I certainly do.
Yeah, so the effort to actually do the actual work of going through everything we do and writing it down in documentation, which is not just what you see externally, but writing very in-depth internal manuals as well. You know, really, I mean, it's something that I've principally worked on and something I started middle of last year, and the turning point there was not the IDMC security TLDs, but it was that we actually brought on an additional staff member, and that additional staff member relieved me of some of the day-to-day stuff to have the time to commit to this. I mean, the idea of timing this so it's for the IDM CCTV fast track is simply that we knew we'd get more of these kinds of questions just purely due to volume, nothing to do with the fact that IDMs are not IDMs. It's just that numerically we have a lot more requests going simultaneously and there's a lot more interacting with the requesters, and that's purely it. So that's the driver for getting it done sooner rather than later at this particular point in time. But it wasn't the driver behind why we wanted to document things in the first place. I mean, we've thought that that is a good idea. I mean, well, I certainly have, and I think my colleagues agree that is a good idea anyway.
And I completely agree with you that in the world of alternatives, more clearly documented stuff, whatever, all of those things are good, and you would want that to happen. But what I think is problematic is the notion that, on the one hand, you know, there's this fast-track process going on that is really intended from the completely brain-dead layman perspective to be relatively non-controversial, or at least non-controversial within the local community process, versus using that process to establish policy that is going to have implications for, you know, all kinds of things that we haven't thought through carefully. And I completely understand and sympathize with your desire to have a sort of clearly articulated set of, you know, here's how we proceed. But what I'm not hearing, and I'm totally willing to hear it, is the articulation of why your job is more difficult right now in the absence of these procedures with respect to the fast track?
Well, again, I can just say that dealing with a bunch of, like, a numerically larger number of requests simultaneously or within very short order is a lot more challenging than dealing with, you know, one or two going on simultaneously at any one time, which is historically what we've done. I mean, perhaps I can paint the picture by just giving you, you know, an anonymized scenario. In a lot of the education and build up to launching IDM Fast Track, there was a lot of emphasis on the string selection. And quite rightly, it was a new process. You know, ICANN had to explain this new process in great detail, explaining how evaluations will be conducted. And, you know, I know Tina Dam gave a number of presentations on this in previous ICANN meetings. And then, you know, in her slides, she said, you know, she made it clear it's a two-phase process, string selection and then delegation with IANA, and made it very clear in the slides that the IANA process is the same as it is for ASCII CCTLD, you know, the same IANA delegation process. So what does that mean? In fact, there's no documents on IANA's website about what the delegation process is. And, you know, some of the CCTLD operators who have been running CCTLDs for 25 years have... Some have assumed it's exactly the same as it was in 1985. So they've gone through the whole string selection process and, you know, been passed. And then they've just sent an email to IANA saying, delegate, please. And then with no supporting documentation, with no extra information at all. And we've then had to educate them, you know, this is a, you know, due diligence process and you need to supply documentation covering a spectrum of things, which, you know, is in the documents I've shared with the working group. And, you know, staff will compile a report, provide it to the board, they'll do their own assessment and vote on it. And to them, this was new to them. They didn't expect that IANA would be asking them for anything. And, you know, I don't fault them. There's no documentation of this on ICANN's website. This isn't clearly articulated anyway. I think a lot of people assume this is well understood, but, you know, if you look at a delegation request from 1985, very different from a delegation request today in terms of how it's practically implemented. So, you know, I completely
understand where you're coming from, and I think, you know, we need to figure out how to help you with respect to dealing with the increase in the number of requests that you're dealing with, and, you know, some kind of clarity with respect to that. But I'm very concerned about having the Fast Track IDN process drive a whole bunch of other things.
Okay, I think points made and noted, Becky and Kim, thanks. And we probably need to start to look at winding up this call. We've been going for an hour and a half and need to come to a conclusion. I think the only other thing on my agenda was the preparation of a progress report for the Nairobi meeting.
Keith, you had asked earlier about documents.
Yes.
I'm going to beat my drum again about this document that I spent some time commenting on. It's a couple calls ago now. The DRD Workgroup Phase 1, the delegation process. Version,
yep.
0.1.
Yep.
And I just, I know, this is somewhere on the schedule, and I just thought I'd raise the flag again.
Okay, I'm not quite sure. My memory's not as good as yours, Bill. Which particular document and what was the issue?
This was I don't know what we called it, but the title at the top of the page was DRD Work WG Phase 1 Delegation Process Initial Draft Topic Paper Version 0.1.
Okay, and your objection to it was?
It wasn't an objection. I made several comments and proposed modifications, mostly editorial, but also some with respect to content, as I did with the IANA procedure. And this is a document which I believe we were hoping to have ready for Nairobi.
Yeah. Bernie, the status of that document?
I believe we sort of tried to roll that in the next definition of document, which was approved. At least that was my take on it, but I'll look at that and try to confirm that.
Okay. Can you repost the most recent version to the list after the call, Benny? And Bill, if you've got any objections still, please, or issues still, please post them to the list.
Well, if it has been posted, maybe I missed it.
It may be. So let's have a look fairly promptly after this meeting. We are meeting again on the 25th of February. So. Any final sort of changes to that document could be dealt to then. Now we do need to produce a progress report to Nairobi, and for your information too, in terms of the GAC call last night, the GAC do want a report from this working group at Nairobi as well. So our progress report should be the document that provides information to both the CCNSO and the GAC. And to that end, I think the action point should be that Bernie Butt and myself should start to pen that report and get it on the list fairly soon, so that we can have a sign-off on that on the 25th of February, because that will be literally the last day for filing that report into the ICANN system. So can I ask all working group members to keep an eye on the list for that document and make their comments rapidly? Okay, in terms of any other business, does anyone have any other points they wish to raise? No other business. Okay, just to quickly summarise, I'll post to the list very shortly the changes to the schedule for Nairobi, particularly on the Sunday, the change of the times. I'll post to the list the workshop outline for the workshop at Nairobi and invite any comments on that. There was an action point that Suzanne and Martin would seek to give us some idea of the status of the GAC principles as the GAC understands it. And I'll post the ICANN, CCNSO, DRD, WG relevance of old RFCs document with that as well. And Bernie will post the most recent document of the delegations process that Bill was concerned about.
Yeah, I'm looking on the wiki. I don't see it.
Okay. Okay, we'll have a look at that. And if there's nothing else, I'd just like to thank all of you for your attendance and your endurance on another long call. And our next meeting is a teleconference on the 25th of February at 900 hours UTC. So thank you all, and see you then.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.